The night may be long and the dark may be deep, but the answers are there to be found. Whether it's the normal, the abnormal, or the paranormal, you're in the right place. Let's go beyond reality.
Good evening, good morning, and welcome. It's Beyond Reality Radio. I'm your host, JV Johnson. Glad to be back, although I, as you could probably tell, that cold that Orion gave to me last week, he came in here all sick, drooling all over, spitting out, sneezing. God knows what he was doing. And I picked it up on Thursday, and I had to run to Pittsburgh this weekend and do an event there called Living Dead Weekend, which, by the way, was kind of fun. But either way, I was sick all weekend, which kind of put a little bit of a damper on the fun. I'm still getting over it. I feel pretty much normal, but I'm just all stuffed up still. So you're going to have to put up with a stuffy, raspy voice tonight coming from the studio. I hope that's okay. And in addition to that nuisance, we have a schedule change, which actually turns out to be not a nuisance, because as much as I wanted to talk to Del Bigtree tonight about vaccinations and the fight to, as some people would say, to limit how many of these injections we're giving our children, and maybe in some cases eliminate them altogether. It depends on your perspective. And that's going to be a great discussion, and we are going to have that discussion. But Del had to be on a plane unexpectedly and wasn't able to do the interview. So Ryan and Slick Eddie worked very, very diligently to find a replacement guest throughout the day today, and they came up with a really interesting and kind of a home run here. Trisha Barker will be joining us. Trisha is a near-death experiencer and an expert, and she's going to talk about her life, her near-death experience, how it changed her life, plus the University of Heaven Near-Death Experience Summit that's coming up this coming weekend. So it's going to be a fascinating discussion. We've had several people on the program that have had near-death experiences, and it's always a fascinating story. And what's even more fascinating is how it changes people's lives. And this the life of Trisha is impact equally as much as anyone else, and it's going to be a fabulous discussion. I'm looking forward to it. And we will take your calls, and I'm hoping we can get some people who have also had their own experiences to call in and join our discussion in the second hour of the program. And the number, by the way, is 844-687-7669. Something I haven't talked about in a while on the program, and I don't want to forget to bring this up. We have a lot of people that listen to the show as a podcast. We do our best to get the shows up the day after they air live. Sometimes we get a couple days behind because of travel schedules and stuff, but we do get them all up eventually. But one of the easiest ways to do that is to go to your podcast app. If you have an iOS device like I do, an iPhone, it's really simple to find, and I'm sure it's equally simple on an Android phone. And subscribe to the Beyond Reality Radio mobile podcast. We get a tremendous number of downloads now, and we like to see those numbers grow as well, because it's a great way to deliver the program. And you can listen to it at your leisure, which is really, really nice. You can't participate in live call-ins, obviously, doing it that way, but you still get the benefit of hearing the interviews with these great guests. So again, find it on your podcast app on your smartphone. You can also go to the app store of your smartphone platform, whether it's iOS or Droid, and you can get the Beyond Reality Radio mobile app, which will also give you access to past shows. Now, it won't give you as many. The library isn't as large doing it that way, but it is a good way to do it, too. So, again, it's a Beyond Reality Radio mobile app. A lot of great ways you can listen to the program. You can also find it on the website, beyondrealityradio.com. So, a lot of good stuff coming up in the show as well, and we should go over some of our upcoming guests. Ken Honda will be here tomorrow. He'll be talking about his book, Happy Money. He shows people how to create a life of abundance by changing their relationship with money. I like talking about money. That should be a good discussion. Wednesday night, Graham Phillips, who is a historical investigator and an author, he'll be returning to discuss Stonehenge. He's been on the program before. And Stonehenge has been used as an ancient healing sanctuary and a calendar. He'll discuss that. And this is an interesting one. It's kind of, I would say it's a bit of a departure from what we normally talk about here, but it's one that's dear to my heart. James Willis, who is an author and a speaker, will be with us to talk about the Paul is Dead conspiracy. If you know anything about Beatles history, you know that there was a period where there was a lot of rumor and scuttlebutt about Paul McCartney actually having been killed. in a car accident, and that a lookalike, a double, was being used in his place. And if you look at Beatles records, the cover art, and you listen to some of the songs, there were clues that were supposed to be telling the truth about this. And we're going to talk about that with James Willis on Thursday night. So a lot of great stuff. Oh, and I will look ahead to Monday of next week, too, because Glynis McCants will be with us. She's been on the program before. She is the numbers lady. We're going to be talking about numerology, and I'm pretty sure we'll be taking your calls, and she'll be doing readings on the phone for you as it relates to numerology. So you can see we've got a lot of terrific stuff coming up on the program. And one final thing before we go to break here, make sure you visit the YouTube page. Just go to YouTube and search JV Johnson. It's a great way to also find back programs in the archive there. There are several hundred there for you to listen to and view. And it's also a great way to pick up the program if you don't have a way to do it on the radio. If you don't have a local radio station, this is a great way to find the show. Plus, there's a live video stream. That's always fun, too, right? And a great chat room, by the way. Our guest tonight, Trisha Barker, is a near-death experiencer and a near-death experience expert. Her website is her name, Trisha Barker, NDE, as in neardeathexperience.com. And she's got a new book out called Angels in the OR. Trisha, welcome to Beyond Reality Radio. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Yeah, I'm happy to be talking with you. Sounds like a great program.
Did you notice my cold? Can you hear that? You know, it's all stuffed up. I had a bad weekend.
Yeah, I'll send you some healing energy.
Please
do. Near-death experiencers have that ability.
Yes, please do. I appreciate that. Okay, so, you know, I know we're going to be talking about your experience and how your life changed after the experience. But before we get to that, let's talk about you prior to that event. Tell us a little bit about yourself before you had your near-death experience.
Yeah, so I'm really hoping to connect with a crowd of agnostics because that's who I was. I was a college student. I was agnostic. I looked down on religion. I thought it was for people who were weak. And, you know, that was just my mindset. I worshipped in the halls of academia, and I really could care less about spirituality. If I would have been, you know, I would have thought, oh, that's so woo-woo and so weird and she's nuts and, you know, something's wrong with her. You know, I would have really looked down on that. I was pretty judgmental. Materialistic, I think I totally bought into this culture and materialism, and I grew up poor. I'll make it, you know, and my best shot, I thought, was in the writing world as an editor or lawyer. You know, those were my skills. So that's basically who I was before that transformative experience.
And as we were leading up to that particular event in your life, you were a student?
Yeah, so I was a college student at the University of Texas in Austin, which is a great town. Have you been to Austin?
I have not been to Austin. It's a great music city, though.
Oh, yeah, and that, unfortunately, will keep you out until all hours of the night, any night of the week. So I was kind of lost in the party scene as well, and a lot of people do kind of get lost in Austin. And that was another part of my story.
So you were, and you cut out a little bit when you were answering the original question here. So forgive me if I repeat myself or ask you to repeat yourself. You were agnostic. You were not a religious person. Was your family religious as you were growing up?
They were, actually. So my mother and father were pretty much estranged. They didn't get a divorce, but my father was not around very much. But my mother was highly religious, but the type of religious person who's very judgmental and, you know, evangelical, I guess you might say. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of hell, fire, and brimstone. You're going to go to hell if you do this. We weren't allowed to listen to any rock music. So I think I was overcompensating in Austin.
Right.
Really digging in into that worldliness.
So do you feel as though your attitude toward religion prior to your near-death experience was a rebellious one? Were you in that position because you were rebelling on in the way you were brought up, in a way?
Yeah, because I looked around at people who were religious, and I mean, many times they were abusive to children. Yeah. They were just not good people, or they were like my mother. She was emotionally abusive and physically abusive to me, and that she stayed in this marriage with my father and didn't feel that she as a woman could go out into the world and get a good job and take care of herself. So I thought, wow, religion just really hampers her from being her whole self. You know, like it, I just saw it as a detriment and not as this blessing. You know, I thought that she should have gotten divorced and left my dad and gone back to college. And I told them that it was this type of headstrong, you know, kid, which I'm sure they didn't appreciate in retrospect, where I was like, you guys need to get divorced. And that's just kind of the way that I operated. You know, like I very much was centered in the brain.
And you mentioned the word materialism. You may have had a bit of a materialistic tendency, which I think most people at that age do. Did you have an appreciation for people around you? Do you feel like you had a love for the people that you associated with as just humans?
Yes and no. So I'm part of Generation X, and you know, they categorize Generation X as cliquish.
Right.
So I liked my friends, and I thought my friends were cool, and they listened to the same music as me, and they, in general, we had a lot of things in common, and I'd say that I cared about them, but I wouldn't say that I deeply loved them. I was basically a good human being. I didn't go out of my way to harm people, or, you know, I wasn't a bully, or anything like that. I've heard, you know, Danny and Brinkley, he talks about being a bully and having to live in his near-death experience, his life review, all the times he beat up people. So, you know, no, I wasn't a bad person, you know, but I didn't go out of my way to be super kind or really care deeply about strangers.
And at that point in your life, what was your ambition? What were you going to school for?
You know, I started out and I wanted to be an environmental scientist. I cared a lot about the earth. Then my math skills were not that great coming from this country town. So I quickly realized that my writing skills were my strongest skills. And so I'd taken the LSAT and I assumed that I'd eventually go to law school because law school would be most likely, you know, the path that would bring me the most money.
But you didn't get that far. We're going to go to break here really shortly, so I don't want to get into the near-death experience yet because I want you to have plenty of time to be able to tell us exactly what happened. But as you were living at that point, did you feel like you had any spiritual connection with, even being an agnostic, did you feel like you had a spiritual connection with other people?
No. I was pretty much selfish in a way. I felt like I had this bubble around me that may have been some fear, insecurity. I don't know exactly what it was, but I didn't feel that I deeply connected with people. I mean, I felt that I came out of my shell in college and I learned how to flirt and wait tables and, you know, make money. And I learned, you know, the basics of just being a charming human being, but I didn't care deeply, to be honest.
And a lot of this changes in your life, and we'll get to that after the break. But one more question before we go to break here. You know, many people at that age feel almost invincible in a way. Nothing bad can really happen to them. You know, I mean, is that how you felt?
Oh, yeah, largely. I mean, I was in complete denial of death. I hated the idea of the possibility of death because I thought I would just die and that would be it. And I would merge with the earth and my consciousness wouldn't go on. And I definitely feared it. But yeah, I largely felt invincible and, you know, like I had a long life ahead of me.
And that all changes, doesn't it?
Yeah, it changed in a big way.
Yeah.
I went from denial to acceptance in one day.
All right. So we're gonna go to break here. And when we come back, we will get into the details of Trisha's near-death experience. And not only the experience itself, but how it radically changed her life and her perspective and her understanding of everything around us. And I think that's the most important thing. A reminder, we will take your phone calls in the second hour of the program for questions, comments, especially if you as well have an experience, whether it's near death or out of body, or a friend or a family member has had one of those experiences and shared them with you. We'd love to hear from you about that as well. The number is 844-687-7669. And again, we will take those calls in the second hour of the program. Once again, quickly looking ahead, tomorrow night we've got Ken Honda on. Ken is the author of a book called Happy Money. He's going to show people how to create a life of abundance by changing their relationship with money. It's all about perspective. And Wednesday, Graham Phillips will be here. He's a historical investigator. He'll talk about Stonehenge as it was used as an ancient healing sanctuary and a calendar. Let's talk about what happened. Now, you're living life as a college student, enjoying life. Obviously, you did not have any idea what was about to happen to you. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, so I don't write about this part in the book, but I did have a couple of bad dreams, or you might say premonitions, that something major was coming.
Wow.
The night before the accident, I heard both of my parents' voices like screaming down this tunnel, "Watch out, Trisha, watch out." And I woke up in the sweat, and when I was on my way to run the Austin 10K, a big run, and I had a head-on collision on the way to the race. I didn't normally get up at 6 a.m. And might have fallen asleep at the wheel, might have just misjudged the second light. But whatever the case, I hit someone almost at a head-on at 60 miles an hour.
Oh, wow.
My car was very small. Later, it was a Honda Civic hatchback, and this is the year 1994, and the car was like an 89. And I looked up crash records at that rate of speed, and they say instant death, you know, in most cases. And
yeah.
I was in bad shape. I couldn't reach the glove box because my back was broken and I was slumped over to one side. Luckily, the people that I was in the collision with were outside of their car, and they were in a very large SUV, so it looked like they maybe weren't as badly hurt as I was. But by the time I got to the ER, they gave me several MRIs, and I knew that I had a broken back in three places, and I also knew that I was losing feeling in one of my legs, and that really bothered me.
Sure.
I was wondering if I was going to be in a wheelchair, if
but
I was going to walk.
You're completely conscious during this whole thing.
Yeah, so my body felt very hot. I think that's what happens when you go into shock. I felt just hot all over. I remember sweating, and I do remember feeling like this pain in my back that felt like a poker had been stuck into my back. So there was some pain, but it wasn't quite as overwhelming as someone might imagine.
Right.
I just felt very uncomfortable, and I waited 17 hours for a surgeon because in a college town, there's a lot of accidents, and it's a long, complicated story, but that's how long I waited.
Wow. Wow. So, first of all, I can't imagine being in that kind of accident. That alone, like you said, the chance of survival is slim given the circumstances you described. So you had a bit of a miracle there already. And now you're in the emergency room, I assume, and you're with the broken back, three places, and you're waiting for a surgeon. And I mean, were you, and forgive this, but I'm not sure how to ask it otherwise, but were you bloodied? Was there other damage to you at that point?
I had internal injuries, so they kept touching my stomach, and I did not. Another interviewer, Howard Hughes, I don't know if you know him, out of London, he asked if I had any head injuries, you know, because skeptics always want to know this. No,
sure.
My head didn't hit the steering wheel, but I had the seatbelt. I didn't have anything, you know, that an airbag or anything like that, but I knew that the seatbelt had really caused some pretty deep internal injuries, and so they didn't want to give me medication because they didn't know how badly I was bleeding internally.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they had to wait for a surgeon. And I overheard something that I probably shouldn't have overheard.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of people get so angry about this part of my story, but this is just what I overheard. I overheard two nurses saying the surgeon isn't going to come in to operate because she doesn't have health insurance. I was a college student.
What?
And I'm sure that, you know, that's against the law or whatever. I don't know who he was at the time,
yeah.
But I just know that I overheard that. So I really panicked at that point. Yeah. And I thought, oh my God, I'm a throwaway person because I don't have health insurance. Someone has to operate on me. There was a woman who was off duty who was a neurosurgeon. And she looked at my chart and she seemed kind of curious about it. And I grabbed her arm and I said, look, if I can't walk, I'm going to kill myself. So please operate on me. And I think that got her attention. And she said, you know, I've been on duty for a long time. I'll go home. I'll take a nap. I'll come back and I'll operate on you. And she did. And so I was taken into surgery, and I remember signing this form that said 17% chance of death, and I thought, oddly specific. Okay, yeah. But whatever, I'm 22, you know, wow. I'm not going to die. And when the next thing that I knew, though, is I just popped out of my body, and I was looking at my body on the operating table, and they must have been at work for quite some time.
Okay, so let me just back you up here. Okay, so you had the accident. You're in the emergency room. Your back is broken in three places. You've got massive internal injuries, but this near-death experience hasn't happened yet. It's not until you went on the operating table. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and that's why I titled the book Angels in the OR, because angels were the last thing that I expected to see, but they were something I saw. So the first thing I saw, though, was I had this 360-degree vision, and a lot of near-death experiencers have that type of vision, but I was interested in the body. You know, there was my body. It was very bloody. I remember thinking, wow, surgery is more gruesome than I thought it would be. They had my hip opened, and there was a long incision down my back, and they were busy working. But the next thing that I saw were light beings, and I just called them beings for a long time because they shocked me. They were deeply intelligent, and they were standing in front of me behind the surgeons. And I knew, like, from this first moment, I have to tell you that I was so excited that I wanted to go back into my body and tell all of my agnostic friends, hey, we go on. Like, that was all I needed. I had a very long near-death experience with a lot that went on during this. But that consciousness outside of the body, to me, meant that this realm was kind of the dream and the non-reality, and that there's so much more consciousness, so much more intelligence, so much more than we understand. And all you have to do is, like, taste it for a minute, and then you know. That, okay, that's the reality that we're missing so much of the time and that I had not known. And I was certain I could convince all those agnostic friends of mine.
This didn't happen.
I was certain in that moment that I could do it.
This is what was going through, I don't even know if I should call it your mind, because I'm not your being. As you were seeing what was going on below you on the operating table, and you were experiencing these light beings, and your reaction at that point was, I need to let everybody know about this?
Yeah, I was just so certain that there was something about me that could convince all my agnostic friends, like, hey, you just haven't thought about it, about what it's like when you die. Like, your spirit form continues on, and then you're connected up with a consciousness that is greater than your own consciousness. And I had put so much emphasis on the brain, and so did they, but I thought, wow, I'm thinking so much clearer outside of the body, and there's so much intelligence that's flowing from these angels and light beings, you know, that whatever you want to call them. I just knew that they were highly, highly intelligent. And they were telling me what to, you know, how to behave in this realm and how to calm down and how to just feel okay about being the spirit form. Then they slowed down and they said, watch this. And they sent this healing light. And I just knew, like, they didn't have to communicate. It just something that you just know. And I knew that this light would help the doctors pick out the bone fragments out of my spine, and that they were facilitating part of my healing. And I thought, God, those doctors don't even realize it. You know, they don't realize that these angels are working through them to help me. And I was stunned by that information. It's the type of information that I'd never in a million years thought existed. But I was watching it in that realm and watching my body, but then the monitor flatlined, and I thought, I'm technically dead. So I guess I was out of body, and that was the moment when I was technically dead, and I didn't want to see how they were going to revive me. And I thought, I have to get out of here, and I don't want to see this.
Before you go to that part, I just want to... So the light beings, which you now refer to as angels, was the light that they were directing to help the healing process for you, was that going to you, or was it going through the physicians that were doing the work?
It was going through that's a good question. It was going through the back of the physicians, through their hands, and whatever they were using, you know, when they're working on me, whatever they were doing and into my body. And then my whole body lit up with this light. And so I think that people who are in service to others or people who are simply doing good, you know, and doing well at what they're doing can be worked through that angelic realm.
And did you notice any change in the people that were working on you at that point when that light started to flow through them, or were they completely unaware?
Completely unaware, and I know later that they were not open to it or not even aware of it, because I asked my surgeon. You know, that was something I wasn't shy about the experience. I talked about it as soon as they took the tracheotomy out of me. I confirmed, you know, what happened with my surgeon, but it was not something that she wanted to discuss.
Wow.
But they did it anyway.
Yeah. How many of these light beings were with you at that point? Do you know?
Yeah, there were two very large ones, and they were mostly androgynous. If I had to say one sex or the other, I'd probably say more male. Mm-hmm. But they had longish hair, flowing hair, and just a deep strength and intelligence.
In complete human form, or were they, you know, I mean, I have this vision of kind of a more of a nebulous kind of humanoid shape, but more glowing and more light.
That's pretty close. So they did have a human-like face, but they were composed of light, and it seemed as if they just made their form up in order to give me peace.
Right.
And it was this form that was very tall, like 8 or 9 feet. And people would ask, did they have wings? I don't think so. They just had kind of flowing clothes or flowing robes, like a hint of clothes. It wasn't that wasn't the important part. Their eyes and their intelligence was the important part.
So,
and that they could communicate telepathically. I mean, how strange is that?
Yeah. So as this is going on, you see the flat line. Now, you're aware of this in your the form that your soul has taken, your consciousness has taken.
You know, I have to say that first I was perfectly fine with being dead because I was so excited that I had this spirit form, this consciousness that I knew was the real me, in a sense, or the me that I could carry on beyond the body. And I didn't feel any sorrow or pain. I just thought, oh, that's dead, move on. It was just kind of a nothing moment, you know, where I thought, oh, well. And I did have some lingering thoughts about who I was leaving behind, and in the hall I saw my stepdad, who was getting a candy bar, and I didn't know him that well because my mom had remarried while I was in college, but I thought, hey, I hope he's good to my mom, and I wish him well, and that incident ended up being a veridical perception, so a verified moment that happened
really?
In some near-death experiences. And I didn't realize this at the time, but later researchers, Dr. Jan Holden and National Geographic and all these other outlets would see that moment that I experienced during my near-death experience and be fascinated by it. So I remember thinking, okay, I thought he was kind of a health nut, but here he is eating the Snickers bar. Okay, goodbye. You know, like, I wish you well. And then I left the hospital, and I began to merge with the consciousness of people I'd known in Austin and people I hadn't known. Maybe I just passed them, or they just lived in the town. And I felt this great peace, and I felt this not really regret, but just this longing to say, hey, I love you. I may not have said that very often, but, you know, I love you all. I hope you have a great life. I'm done with this life. Goodbye. You know, that kind of feeling. And then I transitioned into what kind of looked like the cosmos or outer space. There were just a lot of stars. And I felt the beginning of a higher intelligence coming toward me. What I mean by that is like the light that came from the angel's eyes. I felt this light coming from very far away, and I call it God. But this consciousness helped me review my life, and I had what many near-death experiencers have, which is a life review. Some people have very detailed life reviews, and some people just have moments. Mine was composed mainly of moments, and have to relive anything that anyone had done to me, like bullied me or treated me badly. I didn't have to live anything painful, but I was held accountable for how I had treated others. And so shown moments where I've been really good. And I had loved animals, and I had deep connection to nature as a kid and to God as a kid. And I was shown that this was good. And then I was shown how I was a little bit snobby and cold to some people who I worked with because I didn't think they were, quote, cool. And they actually went home and prayed for me.
Oh, wow.
And I just felt humbled in that moment. I felt so sad that I had not taken the time to talk with them and to look at their hearts. And I saw what beautiful hearts they had. And I thought, oh, if I come back to my life, I'm going to really look at people's hearts and I'm going to get to know them. And I'm not going to judge them by their age or what shoes they wear or what bands they listen to. I'm going to just know them as people. And it just really... it humbled me. That's all I can say. That moment was my greatest lesson.
Yeah, as you're describing this, I can hear the transformation taking place.
Yeah. It's a heartfelt moment where I wanted to hug these people. I wanted to tell them I love them. I wanted to tell them thanks because that genuine hope probably helped me in ways that I didn't even know. And I look back at how I didn't bother to talk to them or I blew them off. And I thought, okay, I don't really like that part of myself. I'm going to be different. And the good news is I did become different, but that moment kind of taught me something. And then I transitioned into this realm, which many people call heaven, but it was this beautiful landscape of green grass. And what I always remember about it is that every blade of grass looked like there had been no death or no harm that had ever come to it. It was just emerald green, flowing and beautiful. And the only person who was dead in my family was my grandfather. And he died when I was 10, and he looked young. And people love that idea that you can choose what age you want to be. And he looked about 35 or so. As I was in this room, I started hearing messages telepathically. They were still coming from that light, that love of God. And I heard messages like, love is all that matters. Remind them to go to nature, be like a little child. And when I heard be like a little child, I thought, hey, if that's my grandfather, he picked a form that's younger than he is. I'll pick a form that is a child. And so I ran up to him as if I was a kid, and I recognized him because he was with this truck, of all things. And I know that some people think that near-death experiences are hallucinations or dreams, but I saw it as he manipulated reality, and he wanted me to recognize him, and he had given this truck to our family, and the truck was rusted and falling apart and sitting in our yard, but in heaven it was new.
I'm sorry, Trisha, we've got to pick it up after the break. Sorry to do that. We'll be right back. Did you know that online retailers like Amazon have constant deals that can save you money on the things you buy every day? It's no joke. Save 40%, 50%, even 80% on great products, and all you have to do is know about them. Noodle Shark is the way to be alerted when something good is coming your way. Noodle Shark is the social media page that lists great deals that not only save you money, but give you the deals before anyone else has them. All you have to do is find Noodle Shark on Facebook. Search it as The Noodle Shark. That's The Noodle Shark, because you deserve to save too. Become a shark and save. By the way, those who've been asking where Jason is, which is a very, very legitimate question, he's on a 16-week filming schedule, so he's going to try to get on the program one of these nights with us again, but it's going to be very difficult for him until the filming is done for his new television show that's coming up called Ghost Nation. That will be debuting in October is the target date. They should be able to handle that. It'll be on the Travel Channel, and as we get more information here, I will pass it on for sure. Our guest tonight, Trisha Barker, is a near-death experience expert. Her website is Trisha Barker, NDE, for neardeathexperience.com. She's got a book out. It's relatively new. It's called Angels in the OR, and Trisha, I'm so sorry these breaks keep interrupting our discussion here, but you were talking about what has to be one of the sweetest parts of your story. As you were going through this process, after you had flatlined on the operating table, and you said that you met your grandfather, who appeared to you as somebody who was about 35 years old. You recognized him right away, and he had something with him, this truck, that was something that you recognized immediately. So pick up the story there.
Yeah, so the truck had rusted in our yard, and in heaven, it was a working, beautiful truck, just like there was no spot of death or decay in any of the leaves of grass. The grass was just beautiful and alive, and everything there seemed to sing with this beauty of being fully alive. And I felt fully alive, too. He looked as if he was glowing. He just looked beautiful. And seemed to look like that. He had died of leukemia, and to see him young and happy and vibrant,
yeah,
incredibly peaceful. And then we did what we had done when I was a kid. He died when I was 10, so when I was quite young, I would step in the back of the truck, and he would drive this truck through the fields. And so we did this for a while, and I just felt at peace and happy and totally free. And then he turned to me and he said, "Do you want to keep going?" And I knew what keep going meant. That meant go towards the light of God. And I flew toward that light of God with just great joy. And I have to tell you that that is the best experience of the near-death experience, is being in the presence of God. I didn't feel any pain. I didn't feel any fear. And it's so easy to feel fear or even just an uncomfortableness in our body. You mentioned having a cold.
It's a little trivial.
You feel great in the presence of God. There's nothing wrong. And everything is right. You feel so loved. And I felt more loved than I'd ever been loved before. I felt safe to love God. So I felt both free and safe. And I didn't want to go back. And many near-death experiencers who have great lives, you know, they might describe having a wonderful family and success. They don't want to go back once they touch that love of God. And I didn't have the greatest of lives, and I really didn't feel that much of a connection to anyone. I felt a few people's prayers trying to pull me back, and I thought, oh, you'll be fine. You'll be here soon enough. Time felt relative in that space. I just thought, you know, whatever. You know, if I don't come back, it's not a big deal. And then God stopped me and said, "Look down." And I saw this river that was flowing, and I knew this river meant like life or this continuation of life. And I saw all these souls, and I knew instinctively that they were just souls, and some of them had their lights on, and these lights seemed to be in connection with God. They seemed to be living in their purpose. And then other people seemed to be covered with fear, and this fear was represented through darkness. And so I saw that there was just love and just fear, and fear was what needed to be removed from people. And God said, "You're going to go back, and you're going to be a teacher." And that's the one part of my near-death experience where I was upset. And I said, "Oh, no. You do not know me. I do not want to be a public speaker, number one. And number two, I want to make money, so that is not a career for me." And God kind of laughed, and that was the last moment I had in heaven, and I was kind of hurled back into my body at that point.
So he laughed and said, you're doing it my way. Tell me about...
And I have to...
Go ahead.
No.
Tell me about God for a second. You know, many of us, particularly those of us who are Christian or in Western cultures, have a particular image of what God is. Is that what you met, or is it something that we haven't defined yet?
You know, I felt the light and the love of God, so I don't know if I would have seen a figure, if I would have kept going. Ians does a lot of near-death experience research, and I've interviewed Dr. Jeffrey Long and other people who have done extensive near-death experience research, and most people do not see a religious figure. Some people do see Jesus. Some people who grew up Hindu see Jesus, and some, you know, like there's all kinds of varieties of,
yeah,
of experiences, but most people see a light. And I also interviewed in the Near-Death Experience Summit that I have with Lisa Smart and Dr. Raymond Moody, I interviewed John Burke, and he wrote the book Imagine Heaven. And I love it that a Christian pastor wrote a book like this, because he kind of eases the minds of many Christians who are like, "You didn't see Jesus." You know, like, "Well, I heard the words be like a little child, and I saw light." And how many times is light mentioned in the Bible? So many times.
Right,
John
yeah.
Burke points out, you know, that be the light of the world. And Jesus, you know, is described as a light.
Yeah.
And there's numerous accounts of light in the Bible as goodness. And it And so, of course, you know, experiencing that love, which was also light, is just my experience. Maybe I would have found out more if I would have kept going. And I think this is, I hope you don't mind my little divergent tangent, but this is something that kind of bugs me about, you know, people often look at near-death experiencers and they think we're arrogant, but we got a glimpse. You know, like, it's not that I'm arrogant. I just don't have to have faith. I know.
You know.
You know, I know that there's a God, and I know it with every part of my being. And I'm not saying that to make other people feel bad. I would love to give it to other people if I could transmit it, and, you know, in some way. And so I keep trying. I keep talking. That's why a lot of us write books, and we continue to talk about these things, is we want other people to know with as much certainty as we do. And, you know, I could phrase it a little less arrogantly and just say my faith is unshakable. You know, there's nothing, you know, that I could go through that, and I have been through a lot in life before and after that experience, and I just know that that's the physical world, and that's not the love of God. You know, this world is not easy at times to traverse, but God is all loving, and that's where the healing always exists. Is coming back to God.
In just a minute or so here, tell us what happened when you got thrown back into your body. So obviously you were revived by the medical team and maybe the angels, and you started a process here, which had to include some kind of healing. So tell us what happened here.
Yeah, so the first memory that I have when I was back in body was being very unhappy to be back in the body, first of all. And then, of course, I was coming out of surgery, and the nurses were asking me to say my name, and I had a bit of confusion because I still felt like I was a consciousness and this eternal being who had been in this timeless place far, far more intensely than being Trisha Barker. So I said, yes, I remember her name. I have to come back to her, and her name is Trisha. And they said, that's not going to work. You need to say, you know, who are you? And I said, no, she's Trisha, and I'm, because I have to be here. I kept arguing with them. And that was my first little bit of confusion, is I felt like it was limiting to be me. I felt like the brain was a limiter. And one of the other people I've interviewed is Eben Alexander, and he calls the brain a filter of consciousness. So not something that we just rely on as the end-all to everything, but it actually filters out some of that amazing consciousness. And that's definitely how I felt. I felt like, oh, no, this is really boring. I have to come back to her.
I mean, I'm assuming as well, you know, you had a physical pain that returned. You had all these sensations that the physical body experiences that you were free from during the out-of-body experience or the near-death experience.
Oh, yeah. My body was in bad shape. They had finished the surgery, and it was kind of touch and go with the internal injuries. My surgeon came in, though, and touched my feet and said, hey, you can feel that, right? And I could feel my left leg, and wow. So the feeling was back, and she was there for a moment, and I said, hey, I died. How long was I dead? And she replied very uneasily, we lost you for a couple of minutes, but you're fine. You're going to get some blood transfusions. Let's just, you know, focus on that. You'll feel better in a bit. So I got the hint that she did not want to talk about this. And that was disappointing because I wanted to talk about the angels, and I wanted to talk about everything. And I kept talking, and people kept making jokes saying it was the morphine. And after a while, I started to freak out because I was in the hospital for 9 days, and I thought, oh, what if I lose some of this because of all the medicine that's pumping through my body? So I started writing down what I could remember, and I wrote down everything about the angels that I could remember, and then I remember looking at the body and going, oh, you know, my arms were badly bruised, my face was puffy, everything about me just didn't look the same. I was in pretty bad shape, and that was sobering for a minute. I thought, ooh, okay, you know, I've got to heal this body.
We're going to go to break here in just a second, but did you feel at that point that you were on a mission of some sort, or does that come later? Do you feel like you were, when you were sent off by God, that you had a purpose?
Yeah, I really did. As soon as on day 9, they got me up and I walked the hall and I realized I was going to be a teacher and I would have to do what God said. that was just the end of my willfulness.
I want to ask you about what happened to you after you recovered, because you became a teacher, you went into teaching, and you went overseas. And I know this is an important part of your story, because your faith was challenged because of a terrible accident. You found your answers, and then something horrible happens to you. Tell us what happened quickly.
So I was a teacher in South Korea, and when you live in a foreign country, you know, you're not a citizen of that country. I had a work visa, and I didn't realize that I was perhaps in more danger not being a citizen of the country, and I was sexually assaulted, and there was no justice, because it's hard enough to get justice, I think, you know, for South Korean women, much less a foreigner, so I was just advised to let it go, and go home if I wanted to, and just deal with it. And so that moment was a big challenge, of course, being back in the body and having to learn to heal from that. But what I found is working as a teacher in public schools with junior high students and high school students, and then later college students, many students have been either victims as children or they've been victims as teenagers or adults. And this is men and women, you know, there was a young boy in one of my classes who fell apart, and the other teachers didn't understand what was going on, but the guy who had raped him when he was a kid was getting out of jail that day and coming back to that town, and was not doing well that day. But I saw that, I was able to work with him and, you know, get him to the counselor and then just talk with him that year about how to heal and how to really put his life back together from that moment. And you know, I think being able to see that wound in so many people and see and offer them a way to get counseling and begin a healing process helped a lot of people. It wasn't ideal, you know, but we live in a world that isn't ideal. So whatever we experience, we're called to reform it, to change it, to bring more healing, I think, to societies to bring more awareness. So anytime I had a student who wanted to join the Peace Corps, you know, I'd remind them, you know, about, you know, check into the laws of that country and what are you getting yourself into, and do you know where the embassy is, and you know, just basic safety things.
What did that do to you? You had already had such a terrible but then turned amazing experience with the accident and the near-death experience. You met God. You talked and heard from God. And then this happens to you, which must have seemed, you know, horrible beyond belief. Did it shake your confidence at all?
Well, there's two parts to it. So, yes, in the physical body, I do suffer some trauma, and I've worked with the PTSD and the panic attacks and that sort of thing. Yeah. But the spiritual realm is the great healer, because I know that we don't take any of that pain with us, that. And so I thought, well, how can I bring some of that healing into the lives of other people and speed it up? How can I bring it into my own life? And how can I really give hope to people, no matter what they've gone through, whether it's financial loss, divorce, you know, sexual assault, child abuse, whatever, we all have trauma. I mean, I'd say that most everyone on the planet, even if they've had a super blessed life, has had their heart broken.
There's an intimacy with the type of assault and trauma that you went through versus money problems or one of these other things you list. I mean, it's very, very different, very, very personal.
Yeah, it is. And it was a harder one to heal. But it's more common than people think. I mean, I tell people to go volunteer in a low-income school district for 6 weeks, and your life will be changed. You know, there's so many kids who are unprotected. You know, fathers are not there. Mothers are working all the time, and they're just kind of left in dangerous situations. And so there's a lot of trauma in children's lives and teenagers' lives, and it's way more common than we realize in some areas.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. Tricia, the book, Angels in the R. Now, you didn't decide to write this right away, but what made you finally decide to put this into a book?
That's a good question. So my mission was simply to teach, and I lived that out for 25 years, and I worked with students of all ages, junior high to college, and one day, about 5 years ago, I was walking up the stairs, and I heard this booming, again, telepathic message, and it was basically the message was, your mission is completed, you've done what I ask, you're free to do what you want. And I thought, what? Well, just going to die? You mean my mission is done? It's over?
This just hit you? It just hit you as you're walking along? This message?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was so strange. And I assumed I would teach until I was 90 and, you know, just keep plugging away and trying to make a difference. And when I heard that, I kind of jokingly said, because of course I'm a jokester, I was like, what do you think I want? So I can just go sit in a hammock in a tropical location and I'll be taken care of? God was like, not exactly. You kind of learned your lesson. You learned that if you work with others and you work to make their lives better, your own life becomes better. So, you know, you don't have to teach. You can do that in other ways. And I thought, okay, well, then I'll spend the world. I am an English professor, and one of my heroes is Frank McCoyt, and he wrote Angela's Ashes. And I thought, all right, then I'll inspire all those students who did like writing, and I'll write a book and put it out there in the world, even at a time when there are not as many readers and bookstores are closing like mad. I thought, whatever, I'll do it. And, you know, I'll have fun with it, and it'll be more than the book. It will just legitimize near-death experiences. And that's what I hope to do is, you know, there are all kind of memoirs out there, like Eat, Pray, Love and Glass Castle. And a really great one that just came out was Educated. And, you know, all of these memoirs talk about, and they have some similar themes to me, parents who were somewhat undependable or abusive in some cases, and yet their spirits strove to do more and see more. And, you know, there was that element of my story, but there's also the near-death experience element. And I thought, I don't want just spiritual readers. I mean, I want them because they understand me, but I want that mainstream crowd and agnostics across the country to read my near-death experience and go, you know, maybe this is what happens when we die, you know, and kind of open up some. So that was my hope.
What do you say to folks who don't necessarily take your experience the way you take it? I mean, they're obviously skeptics, they're obviously critics, but they're also people that just don't see it the same way you do. I mean, you must meet these people.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I was really excited when the book came out, and I posted a link in my graduate school. And this man attacked me, and he said, I can't believe that, you know, Simon & Schuster published the ebook part and Post Hill Press published the paperback. I believe legitimate publicists would publish something about angels, and I can't believe, you know, someone from our class would write about angels. You know, and he was just like a, you know, a hurricane or an atheist. And I replied, you know what? You're my ideal reader. Go ahead and read it and judge my writing and judge my skill at telling my story. And I'd rather have you any day of the week than someone who is going to criticize my actual experience, you know, and just go, you didn't see Jesus or you didn't do this. Or, you know, like, I'd rather have an agnostic kind of, or a hardcore atheist, at least open their minds just a tiny bit that maybe I wasn't hallucinating. Maybe I'm this certain, and maybe I'm reliable.
Does you've met with many other near-death experiencers since you had your experiences, and specifically since you've really started to talk about it more openly? Do you find that the stories and the experiences have a commonality to them? Are they the same type of experiences across the board, or does every single one differ depending on the person?
You know, there are some commonalities, and this desire to spread healing in the love is in love in this world is something that I've noticed. So I partnered with Lisa Smart and Raymond Moody this year. Last year, I created this online summit, and this year I worked with them, and we interviewed lots of people, and they tell their stories online. And then there's on June 23rd, we have this day where people can ask their questions and near-death experiencers, but most of us come back with a mission to help other people and not to harm others. So, you know, when I see people who are in the state of wanting to do good for this world, whether it's adding therapy through art or through music or through through being a minister, whatever the case, there are people who just want to do good in this world. And for me, it was doing good in school systems. But I think there is this natural humanitarian desire in near-death experiencers. And there's also an excitement that we feel about God. You know, we can't help but kind of long for it, miss it, get excited about that presence of God. So there are definitely commonalities, though the stories differ a little. There are certainly after effects that we have in common.
A lot of people who've had a near-death experience or an out-of-body experience often come back and they have other sensitivities that have either developed or awakened. And I know that's true of you as well, right? You're now a medium.
Yes, I am a reluctant medium, and I don't give many readings, and I don't really delve into that too much. But when my father died, I went ahead and followed him in the afterlife, and I got many messages from him. And I continued to communicate with my grandfather since I saw him in heaven, and I think we have a natural connection to our loved ones, and I love to open other people up to their own connection to their loved ones and to verify that for them, and that's why I don't mind doing it on occasion.
And do you know, is it that after that experience, the veil is thinner for people who have had that experience, or is there a pipeline that is established that allows you to connect to that other side more easily than other people may? And again, this is not just you. I've heard this story. It's very common.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said. So, I mean, I saw a ghost and there were all kind of paranormal activities and things that happened around me after my near-death experience. And I thought, okay, so I crossed over and now things are just kind of flimsy now.
You know, like
I have this ability, and I would tell ghosts to go back to the light and, you know, just kind of usher them back and assure them how wonderful it is. And there were, you know, just moments in the classroom when I'd get, you know, different ancestors, usually grandparents, who were coming in for their grandchildren. And I think a lot of times they do want to be their guides. And I didn't necessarily tell my students that I was using that guidance, but I asked them things and gave them hints. And so, yeah, I think that veil just is a little bit thinner.
Now, you, on your website, again, it's your name, Tricia Barker with NDE, so TrishaBarkerNDE.com. You offer a lot of different consultation services. Tell us what people would find if they went to your website and wanted to connect with you more.
Well, if you want to connect with me and lots of near-death experiencers, the first thing is this NDE Summit that is happening on June 23rd, where you can ask your questions of Dr. Eben Alexander, Dr. Raymond Moody, Dr. Jeffrey Long, many near-death experiencers. David Ditchfield is this amazing, he has an amazing story where he was run over by a train in England, and he came back, and he only played guitar, but he came back and he had this musical ability, and he created a symphony that was played by the BBC and got the standing ovation. So, you know, God kind of shows off, I think, with some near-death experiencers and really, really gives them some amazing gifts. But yeah, I've had a lot of connection with other experiencers. And then I do offer some guidance to people. I'm fairly intuitive. And really, I think all these years of working with students and using that angelic guidance and that connection to the other side, I just enjoy being present with people and seeing what comes through for their benefit and their healing.
Now, the summit, that's an online summit, right? People can do it from anywhere they are.
Yes, yeah. So it's, yeah, you don't have to travel. And I have lots of years of education and online education, and this helped many busy parents and people who didn't have enough money for college. They could take online classes. So I thought, hey, why not bring some of these conferences that people can't travel to the online format and let it be more affordable and easy for people to just engage with this. Because many people who are on the fence, so say they doubt a little, if they sit and they listen to near-death experiencers for 12 hours and then get all their questions answered, a lot of times at the end of that, they have this kind of breath of relief and they go, you know what, I think I believe now. they really get to this point where they just don't doubt anymore.
When someone reads the book, what do you hope they walk away with?
You know, it depends on the reader, but what I hope is if they're agnostic, and this happened with one of my friends from college, one of my dear friends, and I love her. We've had many arguments and conversations about spirituality, and after she read my book, she said, you know what, I spent the afternoon just thinking about what happens when we die, and I did a little happy dance. I was like, she thought about it. Oh, my God, I'm so happy. So if you're agnostic, I just want you to imagine, you know, what happened to me happened to you and what that might be like if your spirit continued on. And if you're a believer, then I just want you to enjoy it and to walk a mile in my footsteps. And like any memoir, I'm just trying to share my life and hopefully add healing to yours.
Clearly, this part of your story has just begun. You just released the book. You're talking about this experience more publicly. But what's next for you? What do you see the next step?
You know, a friend of mine wrote a screenplay for the book, and I picked this friend because he was excited about the book, helped me edit it, and it seems like kind of heavy lifting, you know, to imagine a movie. But I have dreams and guidance from the other side that many people who don't read do connect with that film format. And I've meant to step out there and just go ahead and see where this leads. So that's one thing. But beyond that, I also have a second book, which I'm working on. And this is funded by the college. This is for college success. And it's a book that looks at healing at all levels and how college students can be more successful. So I want to sum up my research and lots of research from other people and create a guidebook for them.
Now, I don't get a lot of opportunities to go to the movies, and I don't get a lot of opportunities to watch these things on Netflix. I'm always reading for the show or doing the show. But am I correct in, have I seen a lot of, several films show up recently about near-death experience types topics? I think there was one that just came out about a boy that drowned, but he came back. I mean, those types of things?
Are more that I think are reaching the mainstream, but there's, yeah, I think, more documentaries than movies. So
is that because people are becoming more accepting of this
I
notion?
I think so. You know, I was recently on Dr. Oz, and near-death experiences are one of his highest rating shows, and that's why he continues to have them. So, you know, I think people are interested. And, you know, with that, are there some people out there who are going to make up stories? Probably. You know, I hate to say that, but there probably are. But you can tell, this is how I give advice to people. The energy of someone, if it's really focused on love, not hate, if it's really focused on just making this world a better place, then that's probably an indicator of someone who's had a real experience.
You know, we continue to hear news from organized religion that church attendance is down. I mean, I go through my small town of Cooperstown, and there may be five churches, and I think three of them are closed down. You know, people just aren't attending church like they used to. But is this message that you're delivering a new way for people to respect, practice, and embrace spirituality? If you can't use the word religion, I'm not sure which is more appropriate.
I hope that this creates a kind and loving community. You know, I think that churches are great because they often provide community. And I think we're often too isolated in our culture. And so I encourage people to get involved in whatever, whether it's a church, whether it's a service organization to their community. But we really do need, I think, that connection with other people. And is near-death experiences, I think, for many people, give so much comfort when they've lost someone, then they go to these places. And maybe they are more interested in the summit or a conference or just hearing from a lot of near-death experiencers. I've noticed that grief is what brings people to the table when it comes to near-death experiences.
Okay, so one word answer to this, if that's possible. Is there an afterlife?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, and I just got a glimpse of it, but that glimpse was beautiful.
You
and
have
forever
no doubt.
Changed my world.
You have no doubt.
No doubt. No doubt at all.
Tricia, where can people get the book?
It is an audible, which I'm really excited about. A wonderful narrator, Leslie Howard, narrated it, and you can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Simon & Schuster's webpage. It is available pretty much everywhere, Google Play, iTunes.
And I know the summit is this coming weekend, I believe. Can people still be involved in that if they want to be?
Yeah, so if they go to theuniversityofheaven.com, they will see information about that summit. If they go to my website, and my name is spelled Tricia, T-R-I-C-I-A, Tricia Barker, NDE.com, there's information about it. If they want to email theuniversityofheaven at gmail.com, then they can get more information. But there's plenty of links everywhere. If they type in theuniversityofheaven.com, they will find it.
Tricia, thank you so much for being with us tonight and telling us your story.
Oh, thank you. You've a great way of asking questions. I enjoyed it.
Thank you to Tricia Barker for joining us on the show. Now, you said, Orion, that Lisa Smart was going to be with us too, but she had an issue, so she couldn't.
Yeah, she was. Unfortunately, it was a family emergency, but she and Raymond, potentially Raymond Moody as well, but he's not in great health.
That's too bad. We've had Raymond on the show before, and of course Lisa was on the show before talking about Final Words Project. That was a great show. But Tricia was awesome. It was great to have her on. Again, her website, TriciaBarkerNDE.com. All sorts of information there, particularly if you're interested in the online summit that's coming up this weekend. Some pretty cool stuff there. So, are you over this cold that you gave me?
Because it's not the same cold. Mine lasted 2 days.
Well, I don't know if it's the same cold or not, but man,
you got
all I know is you came in here hacking up a lung, and
you got the Scarecon crud. I think,
yeah, or something. I mean, I feel okay, but I'm still all congested. So hopefully tomorrow that'll resolve itself. Who do we have on tomorrow night?
We've got Ken Honda, Happy Money.
Happy Money. That's right. He's going to show people how to create a life of abundance by changing their relationship with money.
Beyond Reality Radio is hosted by Jason Hawes and JV Johnson and produced by Alexandria Johnson and Slick Eddie Edwards for Entercom Radio. Beyond Reality Radio is distributed by Westwood One Radio Networks. Stop by our Facebook page and say hello. Follow the hosts on Facebook as well. For Jason Hawes, follow at jasonhawes.taps. For JV Johnson, follow at jvjparanormal. If you'd like to be a guest on Beyond Reality Radio or you have a suggestion for a guest, contact Slick Eddie Edwards at slickeddieedwards@gmail.com. Be sure to visit our chat room as well at beyondrealityradio.com. Thanks for listening.